You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast for Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com, and our episode today is brought to you by Pepsi. This football season is different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season, because Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Today we are doing our weekly mailbag show. It's a little bit early due to some scheduling matters, thanks to everybody who sent in questions. And our first question comes from Jim. Jim asks about Sam Darnold's financial future with the Jets. And in particular, Jim wants to know that if the Jets do not draft a quarterback this year, what will it cost the team to pick up Darnold's fifth-year option for the 22-22 season, and what would the franchise tag cost in 2022? So essentially what Jim is asking is about how much it would cost to keep Sam Darnold, because Sam Darnold is on year three of his four-year rookie contract, but first-round picks in their contract, every first-round pick has a team option for the fifth year. The team has the option to keep the player for the fifth year. And I think what Jim's asking is, how much would it cost the Jets to pick up that team option for Darnold's fifth year? And if they don't pick it up, how much would it cost the Jets to give Darnold the franchise tag for that fifth year if they wanted to keep him? And I don't have an exact answer for Jim. I was able to put together some estimates just by doing a little bit of math. Now, the fifth-year option has changed with the new collective bargaining agreement that the players and owners agreed to a few months back. In the past, the fifth-year option, the amount of money you made was related to where you were drafted. Players who were picked in the top 10 cost more on their fifth-year option than players who were picked later in the first round. That has changed. The amount of money you make on the fifth-year option is now related to your playing time and whether you make a Pro Bowl. There's another big change, and this is a really important change. The fifth-year option used to not be guaranteed. You could pick up a player, you could pick up a fifth-year option, and you could cut a player, and there would be no dead money, at least until the player got to the fifth year. The fifth-year option is now fully guaranteed, will now be fully guaranteed going forward once you pick it up. So if the Jets pick up the option on Darnold, they are guaranteeing his salary for 2022. They're guaranteeing his salary for the fifth year. So these are factors that need to be considered. But if you look at where the NFL is right now, I think the fifth-year option for Darnold would probably, and this is just a rough estimate, it probably would be about $22 million. I think that's probably the ballpark of what it would cost Darnold. So I think Darnold's fifth-year salary would be $22 million if the Jets picked it up. And again, that money would be guaranteed. That's fully guaranteed now. Whereas the franchise tag, I think, would probably fall, and again, this is just an estimate, I think it probably would fall somewhere between $25 and $30 million. And I think that this is something that's going to be interesting to watch in the league, because in the past, it's been kind of a no-brainer, unless the player was a total bust, that you would pick up the fifth-year option. Even if he wasn't that great, you typically would pick it up because the money was not guaranteed at the time you decided to pick up the option. You had time to cut the player. You may remember a few years back, the Jets picked up Quinnen Williams' fifth-year. Quinton Coples' fifth-year option, even though Coples was kind of a disappointing player because there was no risk. And then they cut him. They just decided to cut him because they did not want to pay him the fifth-year option. So they ended up cutting Coples, even though they picked up the option, they ended up cutting him, and they ended up owing him none of that money. That's different this year, because if the Jets pick up the fifth-year option, they're guaranteeing Darnold $22 million. And given the amount of money that we're talking about, you know, it's probably only going to be a couple million dollars difference between picking up the fifth-year option and exercising the franchise tag. And, of course, the franchise tag you'd do after the season. You would pick up the franchise tag on Darnold after year four. And I wonder that whether in situations like this, the fact that the fifth-year option is going to be guaranteed is a disincentive to pick it up, because you know that you still have the franchise tag available to you, and it's not going to cost that much more money. So, you know, you still could just not pick up the option on Darnold. And if he has a great 2021 season, you could just use the franchise tag on him. And it will cost more money, but it's not going to cost that much more money. And I feel like that might be the direction the Jets head if they keep Darnold, because I don't know that you've seen enough that you'd feel comfortable guaranteeing him $22 million for his fifth year at this point. And knowing that you have the franchise tag as insurance, that might be enough incentive for you to just decide to not pick up the option. But in any event, Jets are going to have to commit to Darnold if they don't draft a quarterback. You know, they're going to have to commit to him for 2022. And it's going to cost quite a bit of money. You know, if they do pick up that option, or if they franchise tag him, if they decide that Darnold's going to be here another 2 years, that fifth year is going to be expensive. And I think, again, that's something that could be a disincentive for the Jets to keep Darnold. It could be a disincentive for the Jets to not draft a quarterback, knowing that you're a year away from paying Darnold a lot of money without having many guarantees that he's going to be able to play at the level you need him to. Our next question. Adam Gase will be the Jets head coach in 2021. I know it, you know it, we all know it deep in our hearts. When the Jets make that announcement, what happens to this fan base and the franchise, both next season and in the distant future? Well, I don't know that. I honestly would be surprised if Adam Gase came back. I think it's going to be a very difficult sell for the Jets to bring Adam Gase back. If you wanted to tell me that the Jets would bring Adam Gase back if there was any conceivable way they could do it, I'd agree with you. I think that's what happened last year. The fact the Jets finished the season 6-2 over their last 8 games gave the Jets an excuse to bring Adam Gase back. We know that's not happening this year. We know that the Jets are going to finish at the bottom of the league. You know, they may not be 0-16, but they're going to finish with one of the worst records in the league. This is not going to be a 7-9 season that gives you a rationale for bringing Gase back, even if it's not, and it was not a good rationale to bring Gase back, but they at least had an argument to bring Gase back last year. I don't see where the argument is to bring Gase back this year. Now, what are the impacts? Well, I mean, obviously next year it's going to make it much more difficult for the Jets to get things back on track. For the long run, I mean, you're wasting another year. And for the fan base, I think the fan base, they just drive fans away. I think fans are past the point of being angry. And maybe this is something Chris Johnson doesn't appreciate right now, but I think the fans aren't angry anymore. I think the fans have just stopped watching the team. The fans have stopped caring about the team. And that's dangerous. It's the worst thing for an NFL team is not to have the fans angry at them, because that shows you the fans at least still care. The fans at least still have passion. What I've been noticing it began last year, people just don't care anymore. You know, the Jets are losing fans. People aren't watching the games anymore. They're not really that engaged. They don't care. They don't get upset when the team loses. The Jets will just keep losing fans. I think that's all there is to it. If the Jets bring Gase back another year, they're just not going to have as many fans, because people are just going to give up on the team. Continue supporting local restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and food will be left at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep communities they operate in safe. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDON. Again, that's $5 off your first order and zero delivery fees when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDON. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDON, one word, LOCKEDON, for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season is different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. Whether you have two TVs to watch two games at a time like me, or just one TV, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Locked On Jets podcast here on this Mailbag Tuesday show. Our next question. Hi, John. At the moment, it's looking like the Jets will have the first pick and Jacksonville will have the second pick. The Jaguars hold two first rounders and two second rounders. If they gave all that up plus a 2021 first round pick, it would leave Joe Douglas with five picks in the top 34 and a sixth probably around pick 45, plus three first rounders in 2022. Do you think trading out of Lawrence is, for that deal is an option? I think it would be an option. I think ultimately it would come down to how you viewed Lawrence versus how you viewed Fields. You know, if you viewed Fields as an, or if, not just Fields, but any other of the other options, any of the other quarterbacks, if you viewed them as equal to Lawrence or better than Lawrence, then you'd take it. But I think quarterback's just a position where if you see a guy that you think is head and shoulders above everybody else, there's not really anything you could, there's not really any package that would be worth trading that player for. I think that, you know, you have to view it from the context of how good do you think Lawrence is going to be? You know, do you think he's going to be as good of a quarterback as like a Mahomes or a Wilson or, you know, one of those guys? If you think that, then you have to ask yourself, you know, if you're Seattle and somebody offered you three first round picks for Russell Wilson, is Seattle taking that deal? There's no way Seattle's taking that deal. If, you know, if somebody comes to Kansas City and offers three first round picks for Mahomes, the Chiefs are not considering that offer. So if you think, and I would not do the deal just because I think Lawrence is going to be really good. So I would have a tough time passing on him. The question comes down to, though, do you think that Justin Fields or one of the other quarterback prospects can be as good or better than Lawrence? Because if you do, then that's a different discussion. And just because Trevor Lawrence is the consensus top quarterback does not necessarily mean he's going to have the best career. So it doesn't necessarily make you wrong if you think another guy is going to be better. If that's your opinion, then you would consider it. The comparison I always use would be, it's not a perfect comparison because this trade was made primarily because Eli Manning did not want to play in San Diego, but back in 2004 when the Chargers had the top pick and they traded down and they ended up with Phillip Rivers instead of Eli Manning. And again, it's not a perfect scenario because they probably would have kept Eli Manning if Manning had been willing to play in San Diego, but Manning forced a trade to the Giants. So it's not, but you know, you could actually go back 3 years earlier when the Chargers had the number one overall pick and everybody thought they were going to take Michael Vick. And instead what they did, they traded down, they drafted LaDainian Tomlinson in the first round, and then they drafted Drew Brees in the second round. And again, that's another one, that's another move that worked out pretty well for them. So ultimately it comes down to, I don't think it's wrong to do that if you believe that there's another quarterback as good as or better than Lawrence. But my view is that Lawrence is the guy. That's kind of where my thinking is right now. Our next question. Assuming Gase is not back next year, there's been a lot of speculation on the next Jets coach. If the choices are between Jim Harbaugh, Eric Bieniemy, Sean Payton, if he's let go by the Saints, or Brian Daboll, who would you choose and why? Well, it'd be Sean Payton by a mile. I mean, you know, you in Bieniemy and Daboll, you have two guys who are not proven as a head coach. In Harbaugh, you have a guy with some baggage who, you know, looks like he might be on his way out of Michigan because he hasn't done the job they were expecting him to do. Whereas in Sean Payton, you have a proven NFL head coach with a track record of great offenses and a Super Bowl ring. And not only that, but the last couple of years, I mean, he's been maybe a couple of plays away from adding a second Super Bowl ring. So, I mean, if those are my choices, you know, I think it's Payton far and away the other choices. And, you know, I mean, Bieniemy, I think you got some question marks there. Daboll, I'm not impressed. I'm not that impressed by Daboll. It seems like the biggest point on his resume is that he coached under Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. And just because you were an assistant for those guys doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good NFL head coach. And I guess the other point for him would be the work he's done with Josh Allen. but that's as a coordinator. So I think for me, it's Peyton. I would not, it's not even really that tough of a choice if those are my options. Next question. We've all heard speculation about Eric Bieniemy as a possibility for the next Jets head coach. I worry that we may not really know about his true abilities as a coach. I wonder how much having ideal circumstances, including the world's best quarterback and so many weapons, contributes to the success of the offense. I don't anticipate the Jets having the same quality of players as the Chiefs currently do. I'm also wondering if the offense is really Andy Reid's doing and not Bieniemy's. Even Adam Gase had success with Peyton Manning leading his offense, and I worry Bieniemy may follow suit. What reasons do we have to think he can make it work with an average level of offensive talent and no Andy Reid? Can you provide any insights? Well, I think those are questions. I think that those are fair questions. But I think the important thing to remember, and I think that this is something people lose track of when we talk about head coaching candidates, we're not looking for a coordinator. And the job of head coach is inherently different from being a coordinator, where as a coordinator, you're on one side of the ball, and you're focusing on game planning on that one side of the ball each week. The head coaching job is very different. And I think sometimes people get into trouble when they say, well, this guy had a great offense as a coordinator. This guy had a great defense as a coordinator. That means he's going to be a great head coach. It doesn't work that way. And we see it year after year after year. The media always anoints some assistant who's been very successful as a coordinator. The media anoints them as the great head coach, the next great head coach. And at this point, I think we've learned the lesson. The media is pretty bad at figuring out who the good head coaches are going to be. Because if you go back a few years, the hiring that was most criticized was Doug Peterson in Philadelphia because he wasn't that experienced. And he actually had a lot of the same issues that you just mentioned with Bieniemy, is that he worked under Andy Reid. It wasn't clear it was his offense. And Peterson's turned out to be really good. Whereas the hire that was most praised that offseason was Adam Gase in Miami, because Gase had overseen these prolific offenses in Denver with Peyton Manning. And obviously it has not worked out that well as a head coach. So I think the question marks with Bieniemy are more about that he has never been a head coach. You know, being a head coach, it's about hiring a staff. It's about leading a locker room. It's about making sure everybody's on the same page. So the skill set that, I agree with you. I think there are questions about Bieniemy as an offensive coordinator, having such great talent in front of him, being able to have Andy Reid working, overseeing his work. But I think the bigger questions with him are, could he handle the responsibilities of the head coach? You know, could he delegate? Could he make sure he had a good staff? Would he be able to, would he know how to build a defense as well as an offense? And these are questions that, you know, his current body of work just doesn't tell us. We just don't know. I can't say yes, I can't say no. We just have no idea. And that's something, you know, the team, any team that would hire him would have to figure out in the interviewing process. So yeah, I think my concerns are less about could he build the offense and more about what are the aspects of the head coaching job that don't overlap with the offensive, what he's doing as offensive coordinator. And could he do them? And these are things, and I think that's one of the things the media struggles with when they declare these coordinators, when they figure out who the hot coordinators are and declare these guys the next great head coach. The things that will make a coordinator a great head coach are not visible. We don't see them in front of us. We see the things that make great coordinators. We see the game planning on one side of the ball. We see, you know, player development on one side of the ball. Those are not the things that make great head coaches, though. The things that make great head coaches happen behind the scenes, and we don't see them. We don't know which coordinators have those skills. So I think that's the trick for somebody who fits the mold of Bieniemy or any coordinator at all who's never been a head coach. There are things that we just don't know that will determine whether or not they will be a good head coach. And I think that's the real challenge in all of this. BuiltGo makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your walls, whether they're mental or physical, with Go every day. They're easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages. You can put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. BuiltGo is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. And there are three delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. Visit BuiltGo.com today and use promo code LOCKED and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED, L-O-C-K-E-D, for 20% off at BuiltGo, B-U-I-L-T-G-O.com. Let's go. Locked On Jets podcast on our weekly mailbag show. Our next question. Hi, John. If you were general manager of the Jets and were staring at a surplus of premium draft picks and cap space, how would you prioritize allocating your resources to build a perennial contender beyond 2021? Assume the hopeful championship contender will be built around a high draft pick rookie quarterback from the 2021 draft class. Well, I think the Jets need to learn from their past mistakes. And I think the priority needs to be on the offensive side of the ball, particularly on the offensive line and at the wide receiver position, because we've seen it time after time over the last decade where the Jets put a young quarterback in a position that's impossible to succeed because they have prioritized the defensive side of the ball. And I understand the defensive side of the ball needs to be built up, but I think the plan needs to be focused primarily on building up the offensive side of the ball and building an ecosystem where a quarterback can actually develop and actually succeed. And when I say this, I'm not saying that you totally ignore the defensive side of the ball. I'm not saying that if you get into a situation where you find a defensive player who could be, you know, a corner who could be the next Darrell Revis or a pass rusher who could be one of the Watt brothers, I'm not saying you pass on them. I'm saying you go in with a plan. It's one thing to have a plan. It's another thing to have a plan and say, I'm never going to deviate from the plan. When you have a plan, you have to be flexible and you have to be willing to adjust as opportunities present themselves. But going in without a plan, without any idea of how you want to build your roster, I think you're setting yourself up for failure. If you just say, well, we're just going to take whatever player's there, you know, whoever looks good, we're just going to sign whatever player looks good, I don't think that that's a very good way to build your team. I think a better way is to say, okay, this is our priority. Our priority is going to be offensive line and wide receiver. And if there's an exceptional opportunity on the defensive side of the ball that presents itself, we're going to be adaptable. We're going to be flexible. I think that's what you have to do. It's, you know, having a plan does not mean that you stick with the plan, that you never deviate, that you never adjust because of circumstances that are in front of you. You have to be flexible enough to understand when an opportunity presents itself. But I think you also do have to have a plan. There are certain things you have to prioritize. And I think if the Jets don't improve the offensive line and don't improve the wide receiver position, they don't use the resources to do those things, you're just setting yourself up to be in the same situation that Sam Darnold was in. You know, we're going to be sitting here 2 years from now complaining about how the new quarterback never developed and the Jets never put the pieces around him. It's time for the Jets to actually build around a quarterback. So I think the priority has to be on the offensive line and the wide receiver position. Next question. It seems like almost a done deal that Adam Gase is finished after this season. I'd be surprised to see Greg Williams not have the door as collateral as well. It, of course, depends on the head coach, but what names come to mind for defensive coordinator? And I think that's a difficult question to answer for precisely the reason it depends on the head coach. It depends on what kind of defense the head coach wants to run. And it also depends on the people the head coach knows. In the NFL, these jobs are hired and when these jobs are available, relationships play a big role in them. People hire people that they know, people hire people that they trust. So I do agree Greg Williams is likely going to be out the door, but I don't know who the defensive coordinator would be until a new head coach is hired, just because the head coach pretty much has so much to do with that. It depends on, you know, different head coaches want different things. And it also is going to depend on who's available. We don't know precisely who's going to be available at this point, because there are other coaching staffs in this league that could make it for another year, or they could be fired. So there could be more guys available right now. There are certain head coaches who may be able to survive to 2021, and there are head coaches who, if they finish poorly down the stretch, may not make it. So difficult to say right now. I probably answer that question a little bit better in a few months. That's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy our show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. I hope you have a good Tuesday, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow to talk more Jets.